From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. It's Here and Now. We'll start today in the Philippines, 6 days after Typhoon Haiyan leveled parts of the country. The Philippine government says it's overwhelmed, but believes it's responded quite well.
The BBC's Jonathan Head is in the city of Tacloban, which is on the island of Leyte, a city of 220,000 people that was literally leveled by the storm. He joins us now. And Jonathan, you say that today you're seeing the first signs of an organized response. What are you seeing?
Well, I've been down at the airport. That's going to be the hub of a lot of the aid that's coming in. The rest, a lot will come in, I think, by the seaport as well, and probably over roads once they're cleared. But down at the airport, we saw the US Marine Force bringing in their Osprey heavy lift helicopter aircraft for the first time and ready to use those to get out to outlying areas that nobody's got to yet. There's a lot of places smaller than Tacloban, but may well have been equally devastated. The general in charge, Brigadier General Paul Kennedy, in charge of that force, reckons that they will have very large heavy lift aircraft, C-17s, coming in from tomorrow, bringing in very large amounts of aid. We also saw large numbers of UN officials and the Philippines military helping them to take packets of food and medical supplies that have been donated by other countries out into the city. So I would think things are going to get better. We saw an entire field hospital, a French-Belgian field hospital, that can get up and running very, very quickly and start offering services that have gone. The hospital's here in the most ghastly conditions because they've got no power and no water. They're dealing with the dreadful injuries that people have suffered with no anesthetics and very little of the way in the way of medication. So that's very important. But that's just started at the airport. If you're one of the people who's living here, there's really been, I think, even more despair than I've seen in previous days, because this is the sixth day and they've had almost no help. They run out of food. They're very panicky about the limited amount of food. You know, you need to feed your family. They're panicky about the lack of fuel. They can't go anywhere. They can't run their motorbikes. And they're getting quite worried about security. They've got no homes to live in, no walls to protect them. There's not been much of a police or army presence. And there have been reports, there's certainly been a lot of looting, but reports of other crimes as well. So it's led to a very nervy population, and we've seen a much bigger exodus going on today than we've seen in previous days. That may change over the next few days, but when you look at the levels of destruction in the city, I mean, it's pretty much all of it is uninhabitable. It's difficult to know where they're going to begin and where they're going to house people in a sanitary way, where they're going to put the aid distribution. It's a daunting task.
Well, you spoke to someone outside the building that the people there call the Astrodome. It reminded us of the Superdome in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. People packed in there. And here's a man you spoke with there.
I think we need massive international relief aid here now. The situation is so desperate, we need aid now. Because if nothing will be done in the next few days, hundreds of people more will die.
Jonathan Head, the head of the American military relief effort, said the same thing yesterday. He said if we don't get food to these people, they will be dead. We have just a couple more days. So there's sort of a sense of beat the clock. And look, it's most important that these people get some relief now, but people are already criticizing the effort. What's your take on this? Is this just the natural response when a government collapses because of a disaster and it's hard for the government to react, or do you think the Philippine government, the army, could have done something sooner?
I don't think there's any doubt the army and the central government should have done something sooner. I mean, they took control of Tacloban because the local government was wiped out. I mean, I met government officials here who were as badly hit as everybody else. They have no food, no shelter, no house. So I think the security was the big lapse. It's because there's been no government presence, because there's been a kind of sense of anarchy, that NGOs and bigger agencies have not felt able to bring the aid in. They've seen all this looting. We know as well, we don't bring out bottles of water or show any food when we're walking around because people are desperate and you get mobbed. It's no good bringing an aid truck in if it's just a large crowd comes and just pillages it all. Mm. So that, I think, is a very justified criticism. Yeah. There's always a disconnect in disasters of this scale between what people need and expect and what happens. You know, people's needs are so enormous that when you arrive and you see these dreadful conditions they're in, you just think, why can't they bring more aid sooner? It is difficult when the entire city has been destroyed. I understand the challenges. And if you think of previous disasters like the Asian tsunami of 2004, the Pakistan earthquake 2005, I think of all those ones that I've been to, there are never significant amounts of aid going in the first 3 to 4 days. But I think the lack of security here and the lack of any government presence, any sense that their government cared about them, has been really dispiriting for the people. And I think that's been a big failing. Certainly the questions are being asked now of the central government, why they couldn't have at least been more effective in laying the foundations for a proper aid effort rather than only beginning to organize it properly today.
And Jonathan, I want you to pick up on that. Again, you're saying that at least the military could have come sooner to bring some stability. Yesterday, 8 people killed when a wall collapsed as thousands of others mobbed a food warehouse. Could you just speak to that for anyone who might be entertaining the thought that, oh, this has something to do with Filipinos? Is this just the natural response of people who have not had food or water for 5 or 6 days? This would happen anywhere that this happened. I mean, I think I've even heard you say that you think the Filipinos are being remarkably calm in the face of what's happening.
Filipinos are notoriously upbeat people. You know, I come here a lot. I've been in this region a long time. They're amazing. And that spirit has shone through. Maybe it's their Catholic faith. It's hard to say what it is. But it is incredible to me, having covered other disasters, how willing people are to see the positive side, that they've survived. But at the same time, they are very disappointed with their government. This is a very poor country. It's a country where law and order is always quite fragile. It breaks down very quickly. People are always living under pressure in the poorer areas of the Philippines. They're always living hand to mouth. And yeah, there is actually a lot of crime under the surface. And that tends to just bubble up whenever you get a situation like this. It gives almost carte blanche for those who are inclined to go and just help themselves to go out and do it. And they'll see there's no police. So it's not the fault of the Filipinos this has happened. I've seen it happen in many other countries that are poor. And frankly, it would happen in a lot of rich countries, too. So, you know, I'm not surprised it's happened. Yeah. I think the weaknesses of the Philippines government, which are fairly well known, there's a lot of corruption, it's not known to be particularly efficient, have really been exposed by this. Any government would have been challenged by this disaster. It's not fair to say they should have responded much, much better. But there are many things they could have done better. And I think the central government in particular has not shown itself to be engaged and being able to put some kind of operation on the ground quickly enough.
And again, 6 days without food or water, it's hard to imagine what any of us would do if you had children, for instance. But as we let you go, Jonathan Head there in Tacloban, the city most devastated by the typhoon, just some images that come to your mind. You've seen so much. You saw the aftermath of the tsunami. But still, I'm sure there are things that just shock you because they just don't make sense.
You'll never get used to seeing bloated bodies left, so many of them that nobody can move them, just with their arms sticking out of the rubble beside the road. In many ways, the living, though, are more distressing. I mean, after all, you know, the dead are not in pain anymore. It's seeing particularly very old people or very young children living amidst the most unimaginable desolation with nowhere else to go. There is simply nowhere they can go for shelter. I've seen slums, but this is much worse. These are appalling conditions. It's the children that get you. You want to go out and help every single one of them. And there are just thousands and thousands and thousands. And there's just so little you can do.
The BBC's Jonathan Head in Tacloban. Jonathan, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's bring in a Filipino who was able to help his children. Pastor Amado Perez is with the United Pentecostal Church International of Hazelwood, Missouri. We heard yesterday from his colleague Kevin Vaca. They live on Cebu Island, but Pastor Perez's daughters and a grandson live across the water in Tacloban. For days after the storm, he didn't know if they'd survived. He finally got in touch. Yesterday, he went to rescue them. Now, Pastor Perez, we heard from Reverend Vaca yesterday when he tried to sail to Tacloban. He was turned back because of the security concerns we just heard about. You would have been turned back as well, but you were able to get onto the island to the port of Ormuc because you went undercover. You didn't look like a pastor or an aid worker who might have been turned back. How did you disguise yourself?
I put on my jeans. I put on my slippers. I left my watch, my wallet, my IDs. And I did not even comb my hair. I looked like more than a victim of the typhoon. Mm.
You must have been petrified for your children and family. What did you find?
Well, when we docked at the port, the picture that met my eyes, I could describe it in two words: total devastation. Mm. It looks like a war-torn area. Electric poles knocked down. Coconut and the rice plantation were severely devastated. And the smell is very bad. People are carrying on their shoulders, rice and anything that they could get from warehouses. And when we get to Tacloban about 7 o'clock in the evening, there were military personnel that are patrolling the area. And 5 minutes before I arrived at the house of my daughter, they heard gunshots because there was a group of people who were about to ransack, you know, another warehouse. And the place, some of my friends describe it as a dead city.
A dead city.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine how you were feeling as you were making your way to your daughter. What did you find? Did you find her?
Yeah. I chartered a vehicle. When we get there, I ordered them to board the van. And then early this morning, we took a boat back here in Cebu City.
So you were able to find your daughters and go back to Cebu. But we're assuming that as a pastor, you're still, you know, thinking of people left behind. Will you try to go back with aid as soon as you can? Will you try to go back as a pastor?
Yes, ma'am. In fact, I met some of our pastors in the area here in Cebu City, and we immediately organized a team. We will gather some donations, money, and then food, water, and medicines. And Monday, Tuesday, we will go there and conduct these relief operations.
Amaro Perez, a pastor in Cebu Island who rescued his daughters from the completely destroyed city of Tacloban. Pastor Perez, thank you so much for speaking with us, and we wish you all the best.
Welcome, ma'am, and thank you so much for your concern to the victims of this typhoon here.
Now, of course, we'll be staying on top of this story, but we also want to hear from you. If you, like Pastor Perez, have friends or family in the Philippines, let us know how they're doing. You can contact us by leaving a comment at hereandnow.org or also email us. That contact information is there on our website. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.